Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this April the 10th on the West Coast, April the 11th now on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Welcome to the show. Couple of shout-outs that I want to give to a group of people that are regular listeners, Bob, Karen, and Bill, David Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, Jill, and the General, and I want to thank you folks for tuning into the show. This is that time of the week when I bring my now co-host and our regular Friday night guest, who is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, teacher, and somewhat of a comedian now, my good friend Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. Why have you suddenly included the title of comedian?
Oh, you've been cracking some great jokes. So in our rants and our anger with what's going on, you have brought some levity to the conversations on a regular basis. So you qualify as a comedian.
Okay, I accept.
You and I, Jim, have been covering a particular topic, and we've been kind of winging it, as we say. I don't like to necessarily script out questions for the show because it limits what might come out, number one. Of course, if we're following commercials and all of that like they do in the mainstream, it's very important to determine how long we're going to talk about a particular subject. And we kind of freeform or freestyle this show and our discussions. And we've touched upon some rather interesting issues. As you and the listening audience, the regular listening audience, know, we've been covering for a number of months the issue of sovereignty and our place in the universe, our role here on Earth, what the purpose of life is. We've been talking about a variety of things, and your expertise is not just in science but also in metaphysics and supporting documentation. If I know of anyone who could bring a scientific slant to metaphysics, it's you. And we began a discussion a few weeks ago about power, and our intention was to get into alternative forms of power, creation or use, distribution, whatever terms you want to use. In other words, something we can get our hands on as a new technology that liberates us from this carbon-based power and energy that this planet seems to be stuck in, much like a rut. We went off into the spiritual realm in that discussion, and it's been appropriate. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people. And my other shows over the past week or so have really been, actually it's going on 2 weeks now, been focused on the heart center and the illusion that we have in this system. And I think if we were to tap into our creativity, into our heart center, in other words, we might speed up the arrival of these new technologies that people have been trying to bring out for over 100 years. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I do, but you know what? With your permission, I would like to relate something that happened to me just a couple of days ago. which really has a very strong impact, at least it did for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was meditating on this whole idea about, I have to regress. Randy was the one who actually got me thinking along these lines. I had asked him once, what is the difference between perceiving the world as we do now in the living,
mm-hmm.
and perceiving the same place as a disembodied entity? And he did his little analysis gizmo on that, and he came back and said to me, well, he said, the difference is that you're going to be looking at the same things, but you're going to be seeing it from a less number of dimensions. Now, I have a little bit of a problem with his selection of the word dimensions, because I'm pretty well steeped in the belief that dimension, in my thinking, is a mathematical term which is defined with certain parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than accept that term, I said, well, look, let's talk about something slightly different. Let's call them markers rather than dimensions.
Okay.
It'll carry the same thrust, but at least that word won't be conjuring up a negative connotation in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, that's fine. So he said, let's say that a living person is anchored in this reality by, and I forget what number he threw out, but let's say 246 markers. He said, but that same entity, when he loses his body, may perceive the same place with the aid of only 156 markers.
Mm-hmm.
So he said it's going to be a totally different perception. Well, anyway, that's been on my mind now for weeks. And the other day, I was conjuring on the idea of how to get a hook into that, because it's difficult not being dead. And all of a sudden it dawned on me something very interesting. Years ago, I had read a book called Magic and Mystery in Tibet, which was written by a woman, I forget her name, but she had actually spent 20 years wandering around in Tibet back in the 20s, when it was not a very hospitable place to begin with, but especially not to a Western woman.
Uh-huh.
And in there, she had talked about the fact that you know, the whole concept of living and having a body it's the only way that spirit can evolve. And I wondered about that a lot, and she went on further to say that when you have a body and you can do things in the 3D world, there is a certain amount of feedback that occurs to the self by virtue of what you do with your body.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for instance, you, just to give an example, you might have an inspiration to build a little clay model of something. And if you actually have access to the clay and you feel yourself producing the parts and putting it together and sculpting the structure, whatever it may be, when it's finished and your eyes behold it and you're satisfied with it, the entire experience of having bought the clay, formed the clay, sculpted the thing until you were satisfied with it, and all of the sensations that went into producing that, both in terms of, you know, your aesthetic feelings about it, the strokes that you made with your muscles to shape it, tools you may have used, you know, all of that forms a feedback loop through the senses, which verifies to the original spiritual intent, an essence of closure, if you want to call it that. And so that whole process allows a certain amount of knowledge and experience to be gained on that particular little undertaking. Well, of course, in the course of your entire lifetime, there are millions of such undertakings, and all of these have a way of originating in spirit and then nourishing the spirit by this tactile feedback, which can only occur when you have a body.
Mm-hmm.
So what dawned on me the other day was I was actually trying to figure out what the heck is it like to be in that realm and not have the body. And then it dawned on me all of a sudden, I mean, we actually have the ability to explore this. If you close your eyes and blot out everything else and you imagine something, I don't care what it is, we can go back to that same example, like let's say you wanted to sculpture a clay column. You can picture yourself doing that in your mind. You can picture yourself going to the store, buying the clay, getting the tools, you know, setting up a mandrel, coating it with the clay, roughly shaping the column, and then finally you're going into great detail and making the thing perfect. And when you're all finished in your mind, you can see it there, but it feels totally incomplete. It's like you can't really prove that it's going to be that way. I don't know how to exactly verbalize it, but it feels like you're impotent, because even though you've done it in the privacy of your mind, there's no closure, there's no realization. And so I think that the thing that was astounding to me was that in a lot of ways, using your imagination in the purest sense, without making reference to the world around you, has got to be very similar to a totally spiritual experience, because you don't have any way of fulfilling it other than leaving it in the mental realm, which, of course, is bordering on the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, that was a very, very important realization. I mean, I've been doing it all my life, but somehow I never made the connection that if you just leave it in the mental realm and you never do anything with it, it's got to be very, I mean, if you never do anything physical with it, it's got to be very similar to what it's like to be a disembodied entity that still retains cognizance but can never enjoy the closure that you get when you have a body in a 3D world. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I understand. I follow you.
Well, anyway, I'm not sure where that was leading me, but it was so profound.
That's why I'm
so
silent and waiting.
What's that?
That's why I'm silent and waiting. I assumed you had more to say. So.
Well, believe it or not, that in itself was such a profound thing, because it led me to understand that we actually have access to these higher spiritual realms already. And part of the problem is we don't realize that we go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's probably true. If one of the things that I think these gurus and yogi people realize when they spend years and years of careful meditation is the fact that they, even though they do have a body, they learn how to investigate the different tiers of consciousness, which are all blended together when you're a living entity. And it's very difficult sometimes for us to discern where one level stops and another level begins, because we just kind of take it as a holistic experience. But if you start to dissect it and explore it in more detail, it's very revealing. Now, that may sound like a totally unimportant statement, but here's the thing that's interesting. It is much more intense when you make a discovery like that subjectively than it is when somebody, when you listen to somebody tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably true of a lot of spiritual things that happen to us.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, there are several things when you're talking about dimensions. Well, you use the term marker, and where are you defining this marker is? Are you saying the marker is your location in another realm or an expanded realm? In other words, now we're going to get very esoterical here. Okay, we're told we have a three-dimensional world, yet I doubt we experienced the totality of the three dimensions at any time, in terms of the mass consciousness and the mass of humanity. There were people
living...
Well,
that's my whole point.
Yeah.
In other words, like, you don't think about... Let's just keep it in the realm of 3D.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who really thinks about, I'm at this point here, and I have relative coordinates of, you know, plus 2, plus 6, and plus 1, and I'm going to move over to, you know, such and such a coordinate system over there. We don't do that. You just kind of automatically move around in it because you're used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in actuality, if you were to stop and think about it, your perceptions, which are actually, I would venture to say, more than just 6 senses or 5 senses, but the way the senses interplay, not only with themselves, but with the environment, generates these markers, if you want to call it that. That's why I don't like the word dimension, because a dimension in mathematics is defined as a mutually perpendicular axis. And then when you go to dimensions higher than 3, then you get this phenomenon of using shared axes to explain how you can have 4, 5, 6, or 12 mutually perpendicular angles,
mm-hmm.
which is beyond the ability of the mind to perceive. And
yeah.
That's another reason why I don't like it, is because I really trust that if you have the proper guidance and the proper sensitivities, that your mind is capable of determining the true nature of your environment. And I trust the fact that the mind rebels against 4 mutually perpendicular axes. To me, that's an indication that maybe that's not the right way to look at it. And so when I talk about these markers, all I really mean is the ability for an individual to receive enough feedback from multiple sources to be able to close the loop on his position in reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like navigating. You know, you say, oh, yeah, I know where that water tower is, and over here there's a mountain, and then there's that big house out there on the prairie, and if I come to this spot, I know exactly where I am. Every time I'm here, those markers are all there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, when we consider the, let's say, the three-dimensional world, and I use that as a reference point, okay, or call it the 3D marker, give it a name, just so we're understanding what we're talking about. There may be a 4D marker, or it may be a 4D subtitle A, B, C, D, on and on. I mean, you can give them numbers, you can give them letters, you can give them colors. When a person transcends the limitations of the 3D marker, isn't it possible that the the point to where their consciousness has expanded is going to cause them to experience things with different sets of rules or different laws.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly what Randy was referring to, because if you think about what he said, and again, I don't remember the numbers, but if we use 260 markers in the 3D world, as opposed to, let's say, 165 markers in the spiritual world, when you're referring to the same locality in space. In other words, we're sitting in a room and we're conscious of that environment because we are subconsciously referencing that location with 300, with whatever the number was, 360 of these markers. But a dead entity that's in that room with you doesn't have access to the same number of markers you do, because he's no longer occupying a physical vehicle. So even though he's got another degree of freedom than you have, he's got less markers to define his position with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and at the same time, I mean, there's this general law, I guess, of physics, that two things cannot occupy the same space. But when you get into the concept of dimensions or overlapping markers that have a common power or a common energy or a common nature, something that is found in both and yet not dependent upon the other to exist, you now have a concept in which a person can exist in more than one place at a time, or a spirit, let's say, because when we say a person, we're usually thinking in a subconsciously, we're automatically assuming it's a physical body. And yet in that other realm, there can also be another physical body.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, what you said earlier is true in terms of gross physical objects. For instance, I can't take and put my alarm clock inside my grandfather's anvil. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not without a Tesla coil. Right?
But the point that I was going to say is, if you look at things in the more rarefied sense, the way they probably really are, then you can switch from the gross physical analogy to the analogy of partial pressure of gases, for instance. And we already know that if you have a room, if there was only oxygen in that room, we can then add nitrogen, we can add some helium, we can add some carbon dioxide, we can add some hydrogen, you know, we can add all these different gases, and they basically all share that volume. Now, of course, you may say the argument that no two atoms occupy the same space because they're all busy buzzing around each other, but it doesn't make any difference because on the larger scale, the gases essentially occupy the same volume. So if we look at it from that standpoint, and you realize that human beings, even in the physical, are 90% or more of empty space.
Mm-hmm.
Now if we hypothesize that over and above that, we have an electromagnetic body or whatever you want to call the astral body, it more or less can occupy similar space, even though it terminates inside, you know, the other body or goes around with it or whatever you want to call it. But then if it was released from there, then it would definitely be identified by a different set of markers. So anyway, I'm just bringing this up simply because it revealed itself to me, and I thought it was interesting. You know, that and $1.50 will get you a cup of coffee, but it is an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned different gases. What about aspects of energy that that exist everywhere? Do you think they would be in different concentrations or different intensities? Let's say, like, photons. And you did refer to, let's say, the disembodied spirit. Many would call that a light body.
And well, so, sure. That's you know, electromagnetic.
So, yeah. So you would, you know, what I'm getting at is it that as you go down in frequency or down in into a lower number of possible markers within I'm using that word dimension so that the listening audience understands what I mean. You think it's that the closer you are to the source, the higher concentration of photons, and as you move out from the source, they become fewer, less concentrated, maybe more expansive in that sense. In other words, there's more space in between them.
Well, let me try to answer the question with something that I was shown by Dominic Lucchesi way back in the 1960s. He had a book which was called Occult Chemistry, and it was essentially a book about the body and various chemical agents and whatnot that was channeled. And it was really amazing. I wished I had gotten a copy of it when I had the chance to do so. But the thing that was interesting about it was that it showed a painting that the author had made, which was channeled to him, of the human heart.
Okay.
But not just the physical heart. It was the heart with all its higher aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really fascinating about it was that the dense tissue, which a surgeon would identify as the human heart, was the very lowest point on this inverted cone. And as you went up the scale to the higher realms, that same heart took on more and more different attributes, but they were all more rarefied. So that at the very top, there was nothing but a band of colored light. But, you know, somewhere in between, you had an astral field, you had an electromagnetic field, you had, you know, on and on and on. I forget all the different layers. But anyway, if that's true of the heart, and even if it isn't true, it's certainly very picturesque, it's probably true of our entire being. You know, the physical is just the most dense layer of an entity which actually scans, what's a better word, permeates, several different, layers of reality. I don't know. That feels right. That feels right to me. But
I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
difficult to give an accurate description because you know.
Well, our language doesn't necessarily have the words to describe what you're saying, and yet I can, on another level, I can feel it. You know, I can picture it.
Well, that's part of the problem with all this stuff. Language fails.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Well, let me hypothesize something for a moment here. In reference to what you're talking about, we're talking about the fact that we likely exist in other realities, and I'm going to simplify this. Okay. Correct me if I'm not saying what I think you're saying. And I'm putting this more in layman's terms, not that you were overtly scientific in the terms you used. In the experience of life, we either perceive what's going on or it goes on, and we're totally confused or misunderstood or possibly in fear or reacting to what we're creating. In other words, we're not necessarily creating through intention. Many times others tell us what to create, and we follow a pattern. So we're not using what we have within us in terms of creation. In other words, we're not exercising our full power, okay, is what I'm getting at. And so we're influenced by things that are not of our nature, and therefore they cannot be real. And yet they have an influence on us in that they stop us or impede our ability to be who we are in our totality. Is that making sense so far?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Now, let's say one person has some kind of experience where, and notice the word experience there, it's not an illusion necessarily, but something that takes them to a higher plane or a deeper understanding or a more expanded consciousness that quite possibly goes beyond the 3D marker that would be their normal everyday existence. Maybe up one day, down the next, feeling good one day, feeling poorly the next, healthy one day, not so healthy the next, and constant fluctuations of all these things going on. In other words, if you could see them on graphs, they would be overlaying each other. And if they were colored...
Yeah, kind of like a biorhythm.
Yeah, staggered, okay, staggered and moving up and down or in and out from each other. We always see things as either up or down or from here to there, and yet this could be horizontal as well as vertical and or three-dimensional in the sense of a sphere. Okay, so as we rise in our consciousness and where that takes place within our being is very important. In other words, if a fly is growing from the pads on its feet, it's going to have rather big pads on its feet. On all the energy required for that fly to grow and be and maintain the appearance of a fly is it's going to be out of proportion, out of balance, and so the creature cannot function like it was intended to function. Now, when we limit our understanding or we limit our consciousness, we are basically allowing ourselves to be disconnected from the whole of what we are, and that connection is actually intended to be constantly in communication with the highest source. And so as we move away from the source, or we disregard the source, or the source is absent from our consciousness, so are all the other qualities, and so we become disempowered by that.
Absolutely true, because, like, for instance, just in sticking with what you just presented, if somebody insists on believing that their entire being consists of the meat machine, as Tesla would call it,
yeah,
then the only thing you're ever going to be able to perceive by your own belief limitations are the attributes particular to a meat machine. In other words, you say, well, I can see it, I can taste it, I can touch it, I can smell it, therefore I know it's real. Mm-hmm. Anything else doesn't exist. Whereas the next guy might say, well, I'm sorry, but I can't buy into that. I believe that there's a mental realm, an astral realm, and a spiritual realm, and I'd like to be fluent in all of those different areas of my being. The mere fact that he believes that automatically puts him in a position of sensibility where he'll be more prone to accept stimuli originating in those higher regions of himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's you're you're sort of describing, although it's not exactly the same thing, it's similar, let's say, to what I experienced during the past week when I came out of this constant focus in the heart center in my thoughts, in my actions, and my meditations, my prayers. Every aspect of me was focused in that area out of necessity, or out of choice, let's say. I made the choice that was imperative. And the moment I ceased that focus, I contemplated everything else outside of that, what that focus was, and it all seemed very illusory to me. And that has been a frequent discussion. Every night, some aspect of that came about, and I feel that it's important to discuss this because people are searching for answers to the world's problems, to their own problems, and in respect to what's going on in the world. I met some people today who, I'd never met before, okay? And so we began a discussion of some things, and one person said they were having a bad day. And I said, define what a bad day is. In your world, what is a bad day? This person began to explain how they were feeling and things that didn't happen. And as I went to the speech, I found words being used which are very limiting words. And these are words that I have brought up countless times over the past couple of years on the show. The word belief, the word want, the word need, maybe, try. You know, those words that really have no substance in reality of the highest sort. And yet, here, they are how things operate. They're used to control people, to limit people. And the topic of the book, The Secret, came up, and I had a comment to make about that. That's a book that uses all those words I just used. Or that you just used, and I pointed out, and I said, understand, I'm not judging or criticizing, I'm merely making an observation. And we had about an hour's discussion over these issues, and it all came down to the person wasn't making choices for themselves. They were making, or allowing others to make choices for them. And this was building and building and building to a point where it brought about a very, I don't want to say a negative attitude, just the person was overwhelmed with the feeling and considered the day bad, considered everything that occurred as a negative experience. And through clarifying and just talking and getting this person to talk about goals and talk about how they feel when they're making this particular decision on their own as opposed to making it as an obligation, not shirking responsibility or anything like that. I'm just saying as if they felt they had to do this because it would enable them to get along with another person or another group of people. You see, people are swayed by what other people are thinking or what other people are telling them to do because of fear and because of all the limitations that have been put upon them through education, religion, politics, you know, government, the whole kit and caboodle. Everything in their life, if they're not really paying attention to every single thing they're doing, they're constantly stepping into this quicksand and it's pulling them under, and they don't like the fact that right now, it's really pulling them under, if you understand my meaning.
Yeah, I do. But, well, you know, yeah. What's interesting about that, Don, what you're describing, of course, is peer pressure. And what's mm-hmm. interesting is people have the misbelief that peer pressure only applies to adolescents and teenagers. But actually, it continues right up through to, you know, to the geriatric level. I mean, people are so concerned about what others think of them, how they're perceived, you know, the fear that the government imposes and all this stuff, that they just behave like good little sheep and do what the rest of the herd does. It's only a very few people that have the tenacity to say, well, the heck with that noise, I'm going to explore my own capabilities to their fullest extent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it's a very difficult thing to do in a world where the deck is stacked against you, but that doesn't mean that you can't do it. And based on that, I'd like to point out a few things that that give demonstration of the fact that there are things operating all the time in the higher realms that we're all familiar with, but we don't, when we accept them in a certain sense, but we don't direct our consciousness to it because we're trained to think only about the materialistic aspect of things. Have you ever been driving along in a car and you go to pass somebody and you just kind of shoot them a glance and they immediately turn and look at you?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's anybody who hasn't experienced that. Well, the interesting thing is, if you really dig into that, and I could quote a whole bunch of different people that have looked into that force that's active when that happens, but the fact is, it doesn't matter who they were so much as the fact that it's a very real thing. When it's done to you, you feel something, and that's why you look. It isn't just because there's a car passing, because you can do it in other circumstances. You can do it on a subway or a train or whatever where somebody's reading a newspaper, and you just throw a dead stare at them, and pretty soon they'll put the paper down and look right at you because they feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's certainly not a physical connection. It's something else in operation.
Yeah.
And there isn't a person on this planet who hasn't experienced that. And yet, some people, even though it's been done to them and they've done it to others, choose to hold that at arm's length when it comes to their everyday reality. They say, oh, well, whatever that is, that has nothing to do with me. Or it's not real, it's coincidence,
or
you know, whatever other excuse they choose to pin on.
I don't get into that spooky stuff, or I don't talk about those things. You know, that's crazy stuff. You know, they make judgments, and without foundation, mind you. You know, because they, you know, what you're describing really is an aspect of telepathy, and the physical
response,
yeah, the physical response that's occurring is not one in the mind so much as it's an awareness that is always there. It's sensed in the physical realm. The body feels the attention and the frequency, and so the two bodies are tuning into that same frequency, which is constantly being generated. You know, when you're driving a car, you have your eyes on all the other vehicles. You're watching where you're going, and depending on how good a driver you are, if you're a good driver, you can perceive the speed of the vehicle in front of you, the one behind you. You can kind of position yourself in a space that's safe, and that includes the vehicles that may be at your side. And in front of those vehicles or behind those vehicles. And so you're really taking into account everything that's going on around you, yet most people just pay attention to what they see right in front of them. If they do that that much while they're on their cell phone or while they're changing a CD or lighting a cigarette or smacking the kids or looking in their rearview mirror or whatever, you know, their attention is never really focused. And it's there's an art to expanding your consciousness and still remaining focused, that you can react to anything, any change that's happening. You know, when the person in front of you hits their brake pedal, their lights shine, and that triggers the alarm in you. What about the person who's swerving into your lane? How do you cope with that and still keep track of the person in front and the person behind, because you certainly don't want to slam on your brakes and cause that person to ram into you from the rear end. And so there's an art. It's a multifaceted art. There are multiple markers going on, but they're all in that realm of the psyche or the psychic phenomenon. And that is an aspect of telepathy that has to do with tuning into the other energies that are around you.
Now, well, and the opposite of that is equally important.
Yeah.
When I was in martial arts, for instance, one of the things that I touched on with some of the instructors that I had was the various aspects of ninjutsu. Now, not that I ever studied it in depth, but I was very interested in it because ninjas are reported to be able to do some really extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is invisibility. And
yes.
What the invisibility aspect is goes right back to what we were just talking about. If you focus your attention on another being, they are drawn to you and they know you're there.
Yes.
If you act like you're not there and you just blaze through, you know, of course you have to be quiet because you don't want to attract them by sound, but if you just blaze through an area, let's say, and get behind a tree or something, if you're not perceived in any way, shape, or form, as far as the individual in question is concerned, you're not visible. It doesn't mean that you can't be seen. I mean, if somebody had a movie camera running, they would probably see this guy zipping around from rock to tree and what have you. But the human being in the picture that was being circumvented is totally unaware.
Yes.
And so the interesting thing there is that that's the opposite. In other words, instead of sending out a beam of some sort that cues the other person's awareness to your presence, you do the exact opposite. You restrain from sending out anything, and you move as quickly and quietly as you can, and minimize the entire concept of perception.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend in Germany who was a metaphysician. He was also a sergeant in the U.S. Army, and he had been sent to Vietnam 3 times, and none of his men were ever wounded or killed. And he had taught them this technique that you're describing, where they could put themselves right in front of a person. In fact, he didn't have to be moving. And we had set up a meeting in a cafeteria on a base in Germany. And he said, just meet me up there. And I went up there and I sat down. And I waited for him to appear, or arrive, I should say. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting, and then all of a sudden he's there right across from me. and it was basically he was just sitting there not putting out any vibration. And when he started to put out his vibration is when I saw him. But he was there the time, you know.
Of course, yeah. Well, that's very interesting because I've actually experimented with that myself. To a limited degree, but I can tell you that the whole secret of that is that you are aware of the other individual, but you never look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, over and above that, you also have to be stealthy and quiet. You know, you can't go banging your way around or else you'll attract them for other reasons. But the point is that there is something esoteric in the glance itself. How about when you meet a particular lady, and all the blood just runs right out of your head because you have such an incredible feeling just by glancing at this person. And maybe she has a similar thing, and you wind up being in love, whatever that is. But the point is that something is exchanged between two people, which is totally non-physical. And you know, it's foolish not to recognize the fact that there are higher octaves of reality at work, even in our everyday lives.
And there is certainly an exchange of power going on. Not necessarily...
Multiple forms of it.
Yes, exactly. And not relinquishing of one's power so much as communication. There are different levels of communication going on. Certainly. And you know, we make facial expressions that certainly can give off a certain vibration that people will react to because they're understood as a silent language, you know, a frown as opposed to a smile. You know, you might frown at someone and get a quizzed look from them, not necessarily a mirrored response, but generally when you smile at a person, it's a type of vibration. If they're not living in fear, total fear, they'll smile back at you. In many instances, even a smile can draw a look of indifference. So the response and how it's perceived by the other individual has everything to do with their awareness, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And to be honest with you, what you've just touched upon, you've opened the door to the whole realm that Wilhelm Reich devoted his life to understanding, because the resolution or the distribution of the energies that make up a person on the higher realms will eventually manifest in his body and control everything from his physical appearance, even to the way he moves. And so, with training, you can actually read a person and you get great insights into his true nature, just by the shape of his body, how he moves, how he holds himself, you know, what his stances are, how his face looks, all these different things.
Mm-hmm. Now, that could be also applied, that same definition could be applied to miracles, for example, and that when in the expectation of what we call a miracle, I'm seeing miracles as nothing special other than we're doing all the right things to produce the correct results. Take into consideration what Christ taught. He used examples, he told stories, or he couched the words in parables to cause one to go deeper into what he was saying and not take it for what it seemed to be on the surface. In other words, it wasn't just gibberish that he was, when he spoke, he was speaking very profound truths. And he could raise a dead person, he could actually cause the physical body, or communicate with the soul that it would re-inhabit the body and cause the body to wake up, or return to animation, what we call coming back to life. And in the Bible it's referred to as raising the dead. So, is it an aspect of consciousness, or is it a deeper understanding of how everything works in that multi-dimensional or that multiplicity of markers? And I think it's that. It's that his understanding of truth and of science and really everything made all the sense in the world, if one would apply themselves to that. There was no implication that one must become religious to do that. It's a discipline, like any other discipline, you know. I mean, if you're going to play tennis, there's a certain discipline that has to be followed. There are certain things that one has to do. If you're going to be a bodybuilder, there are disciplines like that which a tennis player has, but they become more specific to what a bodybuilder does. If one is a musician, one is an artist, one is a doctor, whatever you're doing, an auto mechanic, there are certain disciplines that apply to it. But the same fundamental principles are at work even though one doesn't necessarily focus on cultivating that at the time they're doing that particular work. That cultivation takes place before they actually do the thing that they do. You know, the musician practices. The artist both practices. And yeah, I mean, there's anything artistic is not just practice and drudgery, it's also creation. There's the process of spontaneous creation in there, which is why certain types of music, where guys or girls are jamming, you know, where there's this spontaneous creation, which brings a lot of excitement, and people get excited by that and find that extremely interesting, beyond just entertaining, but interesting because they're actually witnessing the essence of who they are in progress. They're seeing others exhibit the example of what it is to create. Even though they may not be thinking that, they may not even be understanding that, they can feel it, just like they can feel the person passing them on the freeway when they exchange that glance. It's almost an obligatory or obligatory glance. In other words, don't let somebody pass you without knowing if it's somebody you know, you know, or people have different reasons for looking at the people that are passing them, but they tune in and they determine what that reason was. Sometimes it's, whoa, I'm sorry I looked, you know. What these things are showing us is that there's an aspect to us that we're vaguely aware of, and if it was cultivated in terms of creativity, what would our world be like? What would our lives be like right now in light of all the other things that people are doing to us?
Well, I remember, now that you brought that up, I remember a very specific instance of that whole thing. Years and years ago, when I was about 7 years old, that movie, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, came out, as you well know, mm-hmm. and it really affected me very strongly. As a matter of fact, for years, I almost built my life around, you know, the pursuit of certain things that I felt I wanted just from viewing that film. But at any rate, the point I was going to make was I was so enamored with the shape of the Nautilus in that movie that, you know, I was constantly thinking about this thing. And I wanted so much to build a model of it. And I could see it perfectly in my head. But when anything I built just came out as an abomination. And it was an extremely frustrating feeling because I kept thinking to myself, why is it that I can see it in my mind just the way it was on the film, but I can't build it? And, you know, as I grew older and matured a little bit, then I realized, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of disciplines, using your phrase, that you need to incorporate before you can do something like that. So you have to learn about, you know, projective geometry, you have to learn about cross sections, you have to learn about structures and millions of other things. And then when you get it all down pat after about 20 years of investing effort, then you can turn around and build one. But there's something else that happens if you're willing to make that investment. And it doesn't have to be just for that. It can be for anything that you want. You know, painting, mathematics, physics, law, doctoring, whatever it is. If you don't let your ego get in the way, as you excel in this direction, you suddenly realize that you're entering into another aspect of yourself. And it's a very humbling experience if you allow it to be. Of course, if you get all wrapped up in your own ego and how wonderful you're doing and everything, you miss all this. It isn't that you become religious, because to me that word connotates some sort of dogma. But what does happen is that you become aware of the fact that you're a very, very tiny part of something much incredibly larger and more magnanimous than you are. And you suddenly say to yourself, my God, it took me 30 years to be able to do this one little tiny thing, whatever it is. Just imagine what kind of preparation, evolution, and development it would take, for instance, to design a planet or a solar system. You know, if you allow these thoughts to come of their own accord, it's a very humbling and very broadening experience. But that all comes out of the pursuit of some form of perfection.
Yeah, and what you're describing and the consciousness that comes along with that really makes what we're experiencing here all the worse for wear. What came to mind was global warming. When you know that is a lie, there's no amount of explanation or no amount of consternation that one could take from another individual or a whole group of individuals that will change your perception of that, because it becomes a very clear understanding and it doesn't involve fear. And so you see the lie for what it is. Now the reasons for the lie are, you know, there are multiplicity, but they all center around money. It always comes,
of course.
You know, I heard something just recently, and in fact I heard the issue of chemtrails come up. This is something that we talk about quite a bit on the show. Even you and I have talked about this, both on the air and off the air. And I'm going to use this person's name. I usually don't mention other talk show hosts unless they're guests on the show. But there's a particular individual, Alex Jones, who all of a sudden made the decision that it's important for his writer, Paul Joseph Watson, who's a 26-year-old man living in England, who has all this information on the U.S. government. How does this occur? How does he know more about what's going on in our government than people in the government? Well, that said, he says, you have to do a story on chemtrails. You've got to bring out all the facts on chemtrails. Now, there are people that have been doing this for 14 years on the Internet. And Cliff Carnicom is one who has gone to painstaking extremes to and efforts to fund and promote laboratory experiments on chemtrail samples, determining what's in them and what illness is manifesting in people who are subjected to these. And you've got people who come out still and say, well, I don't want to talk about conspiracy theories because the Air Force says that they're not spraying anything in the sky. Come on! I mean, what is this person doing on a show? Why are they being interviewed? The only reason would be to put out more propaganda and to bring some semblance of what they would like to call reason and common sense to the discussion that, well, I don't talk about those things because that's conspiracy theory. No, it's either a conspiracy or it's not. There's no applying the word theory to anything as a means of debunking it or coming against it, trying to discredit it. All you have to do people is look up in the sky. And if you see lines in the sky, they're spraying this stuff in the sky. It's not that difficult to see. It's in movies now, okay? So there's this new modern thing. In fact, Barack Obama now is saying, and here's our usurper. He's not legally a president. He's not even an American. He has no business being where he is, other than it's to further the corruption. But that said, he's now going to put pollutants into the air so that they can charge a carbon tax. And these pollutants this is just total insanity. It doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't matter what these people say. Everything they say is a lie. And yet they put these stories out there that people are talking about them. And I'm just bringing it up right now. The reason is to deflect the sun's heat. Okay? He's going to, or he says he may, fire pollution particles into the stratosphere to deflect the sun's heat in a desperate bid to tackle global warming. Okay, now, many scientists are coming out saying global warming is a hoax. I've said that from the beginning. You know, we had 3 feet of snow a few weeks ago on the ground, and here we are in the spring, okay? That's hardly global warming. There's a lot of weather modification. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with you. You know, it's a lot of rubbish, but listen to this. Let's assume it's true for a minute. Do you know that Tesla, almost 100 years ago, made a suggestion just from observing the trends that were occurring in the earlier stages of the Industrial Revolution, where the big impetus was the heat engine? And he said, if we continue to change fossil fuels into heat in order to power our machines, he said, inevitably, we will raise the temperature of the planet. Now, there are other factors involved, but let's just stay with that trend for a minute.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, so what do we want to do about that? Well, he said, here you have a thermos bottle in the middle of space. You've got this planet. It's surrounded by an atmosphere, and then that, in turn, is surrounded by a vacuum. So the tendency for heat to build up in the biosphere and stay there, if it has enough sources, is very realistic. So he said, so why do you want to waste that? So he devoted, I forget how many years it took him, but let's say 5 years, to building a new type of heat engine, which would literally drain heat out of the environment and lower the temperature back down again and use that to create a mobile form of power, like a turbine or whatever you want to call it, and ultimately produce electricity or the rotation of a shaft or whatever his objective may have been. So he actually perfected this device, and I studied quite a bit about it, and so did a few friends of mine, and it's a very realistic and doable project. So the point is, going back to what you said a few minutes ago about Obama actually having the audacity to make the decision for the entire planet that he and only he can do, and go ahead and inject pollutants into the upper atmosphere so that it will have a shielding effect against the sun's rays and thereby lower the temperature. Of course, it may kill half the people on the planet, depending on what he sends up there, but obviously that's part of the agenda, so that's okay.
Yeah, and he's an
expert. But why not rekindle a workable technology that Tesla wrote about all those years ago and demonstrate your sincerity in trying to utilize, not only lower the global temperature, if you're worried about it, but utilize that energy for the production of electricity to serve mankind. Right. Heaven forbid you'd ever think of doing something constructive.
Oh, yeah. Now, it was just a few years ago that they were talking about the annihilation of the Amazon jungle and the influence that was having. That, all of a sudden, is a non-factor. What about nuclear explosions? What about the firing of weapons loaded with depleted uranium? What, you know, those are some serious considerations there. You're talking about stuff that has a half-life of 4.5 billion years? That is not adding anything to the temperature, if that's true. I mean, if global warming were to be true, shouldn't those be things that are considered? Or what nuclear power plants are doing? You know, the
all of this stuff needs to be considered. That's the whole point. You get these myopic experts who come out with these statements about global warming from a particular perspective. But if you look into it, they really haven't examined the whole spectrum. Excuse me. The people who do the ice cores in Greenland and Antarctica, for instance, and can actually look at the formation of ice crystals going all the way back thousands of years, can actually determine the temperature, the mean temperature, at the time that that ice was created. And it varies year to year. And according to their studies, there have been many, many cycles of the Earth getting hotter and colder, cooling off at a very severe rate, warming back up again, and going through all of these manipulations, of which the present one is just another cycle. And so why are you making all this hullabaloo over something which is apparently natural and happens from time to time? It's only because you have a specific political agenda that you want to achieve at all costs. And it's fear-mongering, as you have often said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. It is. And now I bring this up because, number one, there are many other things going on. Besides what they're doing down here, there are things happening all over the universe that are affecting our galaxy and our solar system, all the planets, all the stars, all the moons, and the empty space. It's all being saturated with a different kind of energy. One that they know of, okay? One that they're very familiar with, but they'll never talk about. I'll never admit, because it's above top secret. And so, what am I saying? Well, basically, I'm just saying, you know, it's more the same hogwash. Again, we hear this in and out, day in, day out, and, you know, it's going to be geared to giving up some of our power, some of our sovereignty, more of our freedom, and there's a price to pay for this. Just think about the idea of spraying or firing, however they plan on doing this, pollutants into the stratosphere. It's bad enough that we have pollutants in the lower atmosphere, making the air virtually unbreathable. It's bringing about all kinds of diseases, but, oh no, now the sun is our enemy. I mean, there's no end to the insanity and the corruption. There's just no end to it.
Well, you know, what's disturbing is these are the same attitudes that brought about the destruction of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the arrogance that some low-life politician with a very, you know, small brain can suddenly turn around and challenge whoever designed the universe. And he has to be right. So he's going to take matters into his own hands because it seems like a good idea and because he can muster a certain amount of support for whatever ludicrous project he happens to envision. Well, sooner or later, there's going to be the wrong project.
Yeah.
and we're all going to suffer for it.
Oh, certainly.
But it may be the one you're talking about, for all I know.
Well, this, you know, I just learned about this evening, and I haven't studied this whole thing very much. But then, what is there to study? I mean, how much insanity do you need to? I mean, now we're going to study insanity and try to make sense out of it. And this is a guy that can't produce a valid certificate of live birth and has not been in a real photo yet, at least in his past. Okay, they may be taking pictures of him now that he's out there in the open. But, you know, I've been analyzing his photos. This is a guy that is such a fiction that they can't even present a real picture of him. They have to fabricate the pictures. And I mean, all the content within the photo is a compilation. And this guy understands the sun. And then we're hearing the Air Force says they're not spraying anything, but now they're going to spray it. Now we have the announcement now. This is now going to be the reason why they're spraying, which they've been doing all along, you see? I mean, the duplicity, the audacity to lie that they're not doing it, but now they have another reason for doing it, and it's the sun. Come on.
Well, here's the thing that's strange about that. I mean, what gives the United States Air Force the right to put something in the stratosphere which is going to blanket the whole planet? I mean, what does China, Russia, Pakistan, India, Germany, France, and God knows how many other countries have to say about their airspace?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if that was me, I'd shoot the thing down. If it came over my airspace, what right does anybody have to do that? I don't care what your name is. Where's the right?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. So here, what are we seeing? We see somebody attempting to seize power. Okay, now, on whose behalf is this supposed to be? On whose behalf?
That's a very good question. I mean, The thing that crops up is I forget what they called it now, but the fundamental writing of the laws behind the UN where they were, the charter, that's what I was trying to think of. The UN charter where they actually talked about diminishing the population of Earth by, what was it, 2/3 or something of that sort? They're still talking about doing this, no matter how they want to achieve it.
Well, it may even...
What gives them the right?
Yeah, they I've heard figures as high as reduce it by 90%. I mean, it doesn't matter. They don't have the right to reduce it by one person. And if it's that all important, I, again, suggest they get in line to be first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then let's figure out what has to be done after that one. Yes, absolutely. You believe that much in your theory, then you be the first, okay? And then we'll all decide who's second. You know, and my congressman, Sherrod Brown, comes out about this. There's a continuing gaffe now. The state of Georgia is filing suit, or there's some people in the state of Georgia who are filing suit about his illegitimacy, and they have congressmen and senators coming out in his defense. Hawaii has the papers, the health department has the papers, they've sealed them. We know that they have the papers. These are liars telling us this. These are the very criminals telling us this. I mean, don't people connect with who's talking here?
No.
You know? The very people that have made this mess, have created this whole mess, are the people, oh, you can't believe what you have, what they say on the internet. But this is in an article that's published on the internet. Are we that stupid? This is the guy that ran his political campaign on the internet. And you're saying the internet's filled with wackos
lies.
Yeah, yeah, deception and corruption, and yeah, because you remember Al Gore is the guy that invented it, right? His own words. Okay? So I didn't create it. You didn't create it, Jim. Our listening audience didn't create it. And they use it, or they make use of it, but they have to, like going in a minefield, they have to watch every step they take because there's so much corruption, like there is everywhere else.
Now, yeah, I wonder how that ties together. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, but people don't make, you know, they somehow that diffuses the power of our argument by a congressman or a senator coming out telling us, oh, no, we've seen the records. How have you seen them, Sherrod Brown? They're sealed, right? They're sealed. Let me tell you something. My intuition
says... Well, why are they sealed?
There are no records. There are no records, and there is no seal, okay?
But if there were records, why would they be sealed?
Well, that's exactly the point I'm making. What is there to hide? If it's legitimate, show it, right? If it's legitimate. But I took that thought process one step further, Jim, and used a not-so-brilliant deduction. I mean, it's not rocket science. If the documentation is not there, and what he has presented is bogus, then the pictures have to be bogus. They cannot in any way be representations of what is not true in the documentation. And that is the case, you see. Now, I don't bring this up to divert our conversation away from what we're talking about. You see, this is illusion. This is using discernment. This is being aware, being conscious of what's going on. And using a modicum of thought. There's no prejudice in thinking through a problem, is there? I mean, solving a problem or recognizing the problem for what it is, what's at the cause of it, and what the solution might be? I mean, we're talking about BS here, you know? Normally, it gets flushed down the toilet. Let's not try to make it look like string art. You know? But that's what they would... That's what they prefer to do. Go ahead.
The thing that amazes me is the infinite stupidity of the American public when it comes to certain things. For instance, I've been alive now 61 years, almost 62 years. And the first president that I really remember fairly well and even paid a little bit of attention to was Eisenhower. But nonetheless, I can't think of any president that I have paid attention to up through my growth years that ever kept the promises made in his campaign platform. And that's pretty well true for all politicians. Are you going to tell me that fact never registered in anybody else's mind? What on earth is wrong with people? Don't they realize they're all lying? They say anything to get in there. They'll say anything.
Yeah.
What was the Lummox that said, "Read my lips. There will be no increase in taxes in my administration." A few months after he got in there, he cranked them right up through the roof.
Yeah. Well, the same. I mean. You know, they're talking about revitalizing the economy, and they're stealing money. Obama has secretly, unbeknownst to the American people, tried to acquire whatever gold is in Fort Knox. And he's demanding that of all the money there is, all the liquid assets or any assets that he can get his hands on, he owns personally 58%. He wants it put in his own account.
Oh really?
This is a new one. It just doesn't end. And I talked about this, and I withstood the consternation, the criticism of people that said I didn't know what I was talking about. And it didn't take the guy 1 week to prove me right.
Maybe he's the one that's behind this sudden flurry of all these ridiculous companies that are encouraging people to send them their old jewelry.
Well, you know, at the same time that happened, yeah, he had commercials on TV. Of course, they present this that, you know, you have to have a Barack Obama commemorative coin that probably
sure
has some kind of gold paint foil on it, you know. I mean, anything they can do to try to legitimize him, his being there, and it none of it sways my thinking in any direction other than further down, you know, further down the drain. The guy has no, there's no reason whatsoever for him to be where he is other than to facilitate corruption. And it's our turn to be corrupt now. It's our turn to say where all this corrupt money goes, you know, and assign it to the people, have the people pay these taxes. See, people are giving up their power. They're not even aware they've given it up. I mean, this has happened 100 years ago. But it's in the process of that, it's like, okay, what level can we take this to next? And as they increase the amount of money they steal, the vibration goes lower. And those that follow go down with it. Those that watch the car passing in the lane next to them are going down to that level with it. And I've heard, you know, I know the polls are phony. They're the brainchild of the Tavistock Institute. I know the polls are just to mind control and brainwash people into thinking that they're actually going around and talking to everybody. Okay, when they say 67% of Americans feel this about this particular topic, they're saying they talk to at least 200 million people. Now, did you get a call? Have you ever been polled by any of these people about anything?
Never.
Never. And neither have I. They'll call and pretend like they're taking a poll so they can try to sell you something or try to steal your private information or your identity or something like that. But no, they don't conduct these polls. And yet people don't think that through, okay? Well, no, this number represents. Well, don't tell me that. Why do you tell everybody in an election that they can vote if they're registered to vote and they meet certain criteria? Why do you promise that if your intention is to dishonor that and ignore it or corrupt it, which is what they do, and they've been doing it for years? It's not a new phenomenon, okay? Why can't people see that? See?
I think the ultimate test would be if we ever have another election, because, you know, the way this guy's going, he may just decide to be dictator next year. But if they ever have another election, just don't vote. Nobody vote. And you'll see the guy will get in anyway. Then you'll say to yourself, gee, I wonder how that happened. You know, it must have been that little family of migrant workers up in the hills of Kentucky that put him in office.
Yeah, well, we know that, I mean, those of us that are awake to that fact know that's exactly what's going on. That's what they do. And yet, there's this aspect. I mean, we talked, in wrapping this show up, we talked about the fact that your attention focused on one reality is really going to impede sensing and experiencing the bigger picture, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And we're talking...
That's the kind of thing that they do.
Yeah. That's what they do to us. Or that's what we allow them to do to us. And that's not necessarily based on some special power that's there. It's that it's been set up to make us think that that's the way it is. You see, it's normal for it to be that way, and because it's always been that way. The government always tells the truth, therefore they don't lie.
Right.
Okay. So therefore, when they tell us they're doing it something for a particular reason, because they don't lie, that must be the reason. You see? And to suggest otherwise is a theory. You see? It's a theory. And now they have to make it a theory that is attacking those that are doing it as if they're conspiring against everybody. When in reality, that's exactly what they're doing. And it's not a theory. It's just a conspiracy. You see? So people have, they've given up their power. They're very unhappy with the fact that they've done it. And they're both in denial about it and apathetic about it at the same time. So, Jim, we've got to call it a night. And I want to thank you for your input. We could go on and on, but I feel we covered some interesting ground tonight.
Well, I hope so. It was certainly interesting to me to have that insight because even though it's a wholly subjective thing, and I may not have gotten the idea across very well, it was exciting.
Go ahead.
It was an exciting revelation to me, so I just wanted to try and share it.
Yeah, no, you got your message across. You got it across. And I didn't necessarily intend on pulling it into politics, but this is actually what's going on today. So we should look at this and this is one aspect of what's going on. We could get into the food aspect, water. I mean, you know, we covered chemtrails. That's certainly the poisoning of our atmosphere is an important topic. I'm sure you'd agree.
Oh, absolutely.
Well,
I have great reverence for the earth, and so it really ticks me off to see what's being done.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But I also believe that there is a limit, you know, beyond which we will not be allowed to go.
Yeah, that's one aspect of what's occurring that I know is not going to be tolerated because there is, despite what they'll say, there is a lot more at stake. There's a lot more involved behind the scenes than what they're willing to admit because to admit so is to acknowledge that they may not be as powerful as they'd like us to think they are. That there are beings, human beings from other realms of the solar system and the galaxy and other parts of the universe that know more. And they don't have to lie to their people to exert any, to be important. Okay? Because they're not driven by ego, but they're driven by the common good of all living things. And they have a direct connection to the Creator. This is one of the big reasons, and then it shows you who's behind all this, because it really is a spiritual matter, like we started out at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Jim, I wish you a wonderful weekend. Look forward to next week's show, regardless of what topic we cover, and I want to thank you for your contribution. As usual.
Well, I'm happy to participate, and don't forget, this is Easter, so have a happy Easter, Don, and you and your family enjoy the holiday, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
And same goes to you, as well as the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Jim Murray. Jim will be back with us again next Friday. Be sure to tune in. All week long, got some great shows lined up for you. In the meantime, I would like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible on BBS Radio. Also, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, a great weekend, and have a good night.